Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to Chandu.org podcast. This is session number 42. In this session, we're going to talk about financial analysis and modeling using Excel 101. Chandu.org podcast is dedicated to making you awesome in data analysis, charting, dashboards, and VBA using Excel. Now, before we jump into the session topic, I just want to briefly remind you about the awesome August festival I am running at Chandu.org. The idea is really simple. For each and every day of August 2015, I'm going to publish a new piece of content. It could be a podcast, template, tip, technique, or a video that'll make you awesome in Excel. So in case you have been missing all the action, just head over to chandu.org/session42, numbers 4 and 2, where you can find all the resources and show notes about this podcast, along with the link to the Awesome August page. From that page, you can access all the Awesome August content that has been already published. So I'll hope to see you in Awesome August. And if you like the idea, please share the link with a colleague or a friend so that they can also be awesome at their work. Now let's move into our topic, which is financial analysis and modeling using Excel 101. I'll be honest with you. Let me confess something. This is the first podcast episode which I am re-recording. All the 41 episodes until now I have done in a single take. I would usually list down a mind map or an agenda on a notebook and keep the notebook right next to me, and I'll just talk about the topic. But the idea of financial analysis is a little tricky to explain, and since I don't have any financial education background myself, I have been an engineer all through my life, and I happened to learn about finance and financial analysis and modeling during my MBA program in 2004 and 2006. Between those years. So I had such a tough time understanding some of the basic accounting stuff, and I was dreadful at that time. Like, you know, I might even fail in the course. So I used to worry a lot back then when I was doing my finance courses. Fortunately, I didn't fail in those programs, but I never took up the finance major. I went for marketing and systems instead. So finance is not something that I intuitively understand. So naturally, when I tried to explain it in the podcast episode, I did explain it well, but I pushed myself into a corner where the examples got too complicated and I couldn't bring myself out of it. And as this is an audio only podcast, I can't really afford to have very complex examples. So I had to tone down my explanations and work with something else. So let me get into the topic of the day, which is financial analysis 101. Now, instead of trying to explain everything about financial analysis, I'm going to introduce five critical concepts in financial analysis and modeling. And once you understand these five critical components, which are all loosely related to the same concept, by the way, you should be able to implement them when you are creating a financial analysis model. So the podcast is divided into two parts. The first part explains those five concepts, and in the second part I'm going to take you through a case study where we will use those concepts to analyze the situation. Of course, we are not going to do all the number crunching. We are only going to do it at a very high level, how these concepts relate to the problem at hand. So let's start with the concepts. The five concepts we are going to talk about are time value of money, compound interest, risk-free rate of return, net present value, and internal rate of return. Okay, we'll go into each and every one of them. The first concept is time value of money. Now, this is the most basic, most relevant, and most important finance concept in the entire space of financial analysis and modeling. If you can understand the time value of money component itself, then you can pretty much analyze any kind of situation within the world of finance, okay? Because everything is, in one way or another, ties back to the idea of time value of money. What is the time value of money? It's very simple. With time, your money will grow, okay? Imagine you have a $100 bill with you. If you keep this $100 bill with you, and if you take this to a bank and give it to them as a deposit, and you walk into the bank after 1 year, how much money you're going to get? Obviously, you're not going to get $100. You're going to get a little more than that. Okay, in a very rare situation, it could be a really rare situation, like 0.0001% of the time, you might get less than $100. That is, if your country is going through some sort of an economic turmoil and you have negative interest rates or something like that. But in all other situations, you are going to get more than $100 after 1 year. It could be 1 year, it could be 1 day, it could be 1 decade. Okay, so the idea is very simple. Your $100 is now grown to, let's say, $106 after 1 year. That means you have earned $100. On that $100, you have earned $6 of interest. So you now have $106. That's the time value of money. With time, your money is growing. So the opposite is also true. If you have $100 in future, let's say after a decade, you have some sort of a time traveling mechanism. So after a decade, in your pocket, you see $100, or in your hand, you are holding $1 million. What is that money worth in today's money? That is, if you travel back in time, you go back in time, instead of going forward in time, you go back in time, your money will shrink. Okay, it won't shrink physically. So if you keep the $100 bill in your pocket and you wake up after 1 year, you will still have $100. But if you were to invest this money somewhere, or put it in a bank or something like that, the money will either grow or shrink depending on which direction of time you are traveling. Okay, so that's the basic idea. I'm trying to simplify it here, so I have not 100% encompassed the concept, but I hope you get it. And the concept of time value money is something that we all intuitively understand, because this is something that as a child we experience and we know it. Back in school days, I'm sure you all remember the compound interest and simple interest calculations that you might have learned, wherein we say, you know, you have $100 and the bank pays 6% interest and you invest it for 3 years. How much you're going to get? You're not going to get 118. You're going to get a little more than that, because what happens is, in the first year you will get $6, so it's 106. But in the second year, you're not going to get $6 interest, you're going to get 6% of 106, because both your interest and principal are going to earn interest, the idea of compound interest. Okay, so that is your second concept. The first concept is, you are, with time your money will grow. The second concept is the compound interest idea, that is, over time your money kind of compounds. It doesn't simply add up, it kind of multiplies. That's the idea. So this is an idea which is very, very powerful, and we all use this idea for our advantage, don't we? For example, as an young employee, like right out of college, you complete your education, you get into a job, most of us would have received some sort of an advice, either from parents or financial planners or colleagues or well-wishers or mentors, that we should start investing early on in the life. That's because if you are investing early on in the life, what happens is that $10 or $100 that you invest as a 20-year-old kid will kind of grow and multiply to something significant when you are retiring, like when you are 60 years old or something like that. Okay, so that's the idea of compound interest, and we understand it. The negative is also true. If you owe somebody some money and you don't pay it, you will owe them even more money. For example, a credit card bill. If you default on your credit card bill, you don't pay it for a couple of months, you suddenly start seeing really big numbers in the credit card bill. So you think you only owe them $1,000, but after a year it becomes $2,000, because they add up all the interest and late fees and whatnot and compound them every month. So the idea of compound interest, the idea of time value of money is like the bedrock of the entire world and financial industry, right? Everybody relies on these concepts so that they can understand and work with money better. So these two are the primary concepts. Your with time your money grows. How much money is growing? That is defined by the ideas of compound interest. Okay, we will talk about the exact formulas, everything about these things in the show notes page, where at chandu.org/session42, I'm going to provide some links on how to calculate various components like this. Okay, so if these are the two concepts, the next three concepts are again loosely related to the time value of money. The next concept is risk-free rate of return. By this, what we mean is, if you have $100 and you don't want to take any risk, you don't want to lose your money, what would be the minimum amount of return you will get on it? That's called as risk-free rate of return. This is usually, it depends a lot on your country and where you live and which kind of financial institutions where you invest the money and how stable they are, etc. For example, if you take a country like United States of America, you know, the risk-free rate, I have really no idea what it is, but I'm assuming it's 2% or 3% or something like that. That's the minimum interest that you will get if you take the money and put it in a bank deposit. Okay, so the idea is very simple. There is no risk involved. You will get your $100 plus that interest, right? But because you're not taking any risk at all, your return is also very low. It's 1% or 2%. In India, where I live, the risk-free return is usually around 8%, because our economy is slightly different from United States of America economy. Like in US, it's a more stable and established economy, whereas India is one of the rapidly growing countries. So there is a lot of inflation and whatnot, and accordingly, the interest rates would be higher. Okay. Anyway, let's not get into the political discussion here. The concept of risk-free return is the return or the interest rate on your money that you will get when you assume no risk at all. It is usually, you can find this rate by going into a bank and asking them how much is the interest rate they are willing to pay for a deposit. It is a very, very good approximation for risk-free return. Or if you have a government that offers risk-free bonds, you can look at the bond rate, and that can convert into risk-free rate. Why are we talking about risk-free rate? Well, with time value of money, in the podcast, I talked about taking $100 with you and depositing in bank, and after 1 year receiving something more than $100. So we started by saying we deposit in bank. We didn't say you will deposit into a mutual fund or a stock market investment or purchase gold or commodities or invest in real estate. We didn't talk about any of those other options. We said you will go into a bank because that is the most risk-free option. Now, what happens if you were to take this money and walk into a casino and gamble it? Okay. In that case, you might end up with $200 or $2 million, or you might end up with zero. That's because there is an inherent component of risk involved in such scenarios. So when you are taking risk, you might get more return. There is a popular saying which is no risk, no return. The opposite is also true, which is if you take some risk, you might get a higher return. So essentially, in order to analyze any financial situation, we need to first have a clarity of what kind of risk-free return is there. Why is that important? Where will the risk-free return play a role? We'll talk about that a little later when we actually take up a case study. But for now, let's continue and understand the other concepts. The next concept is net present value. By this, what we mean is, let us say you're depositing $100 into a bank deposit every month. So for 3 years, you do this. 36 times you have deposited $100. And at the end of 3 years, the bank will give you some amount. Okay. Now, throughout this time period, you have deposited $3,600. So 36 times 100. But you're not going to get $3,600. You're probably going to get a little more than that. So let's say you're going to get $5,000. Okay. So the if you add up these amounts, minus 100 into 36, so minus 3,600. Whereas the amount you received is plus 5,000. So you see that in this process, the money that is going out of your pocket is this much, whereas the money that you are receiving at the end of it is a little more than that. Because with time, money grows. This is something that we all can relate to. But even though this process where we put some money out of our pocket into a bank account and then at the end of the cycle, 3 years or 7 years or whatever, we receive a lump sum payment, it is something that we can relate to. This is basically what happens in every business. For example, you are running a carpentry business and you wanted to buy a new drill bit or a tool to do your work better. The tool cost, let's say, $2,000. So you bought that. So that means as a carpenter, you have spent $2,000 on first day. Because of this new tool, you're able to get more work done and you're able to generate $300 extra income per month. So although in the first month you have spent $2,000, at the end of first month, you saw benefit of $300. And this benefit continues. So at the end of year, what happened is your net outgo is 2000, but net income is 12 times multiplied by 300, so 3600. So this is similar to the bank deposit example, whereas in the original example, you are paying money to the bank and you're receiving lump sum. In the second example, you pay lump sum and you receive small returns every month because of that extra equipment that you have in hand. So all of these are situations that occur repetitively in business. You know, a business will buy a new machinery or hire an employee or build a new office or purchase some land or whatever. So they pay a lot of money and then they continue to expect returns. The idea of net present value is like this. The net present value idea represents that if you have a series of payments, both positive and negative. Positive payment is the one that you receive. Negative payment is the one where you give out the money. Net present value will be how much is all of this value total to if you were to incur the idea of time value of money. So far, what we are doing is in the carpentry example, you spend 2000 now, but you're not going to get all the 3600 today, right? You're going to get it $300 per month in future. So the payouts are happening in future. And what we need to do is we need to take all those future payments and convert them to present day values. How do we do that? We take the money, $300 next month. If I have $300 next month, what would I have today? Well, you could have 300 less than, let's say, if the risk-free rate is 6%, you would have 6% less today. Not exactly 6% because it's only 1 month, so it would be 6% divided by 12. But you get the concept, right? So if I have 300 next month, that means I have today maybe 97 dollars today, which is working out to be 0.5%. Okay, so that's how you calculate the present values of all the future payments. Okay. And then you add up all such present values and you will arrive at one figure, which is nothing but net present value, NPV. Okay. Again, the concept of NPV is somewhat tricky to understand. So if you don't get it, don't bother too much. You know, just keep in mind that the idea NPV represents this concept, which is we look at a series of payments that happen at various parts in time. And we want to ask how much all of those money worth in today's amount. So everything that happens in future, we discount it. Everything that happened in the past, we inflate those numbers. Okay. And then we add up everything so that we get to one number as of today. And we look at that. Why does NPV matter? If NPV is positive, what that means is buying a new tool or investing in a bank deposit is a good decision because it is profitable to you. It's just like out of blue, you're getting $300. So let's do it. Whereas if NPV is negative, what that means is this idea of buying a new tool is not going to work out very well for you. Let's take the same carpentry example where we have $2,000 tool that you're buying today and it will pay you $300 extra income per month, and instead of $300, if that income were to be $30 and the lifetime of this new drilling tool is only 6 years. So what happens is you're paying $2,000 today and you're going to get $30 extra income per month for the next 6 years. After that, the tool becomes worthless. In such case, your NPV might be different compared to the $300 scenario. Your NPV might even be negative. if that is negative, as a carpenter or as a smart carpenter, what you should do is you should not purchase the tool. Maybe you should consider renting it or something like that, because it's a burden to you. Your NPV is going down. You will make more profit if you don't have that tool. Okay, although the $30 extra might seem like that, but it's not the case. Okay, we don't know whether the NPV is positive or negative unless we sit down and calculate it. But once you calculate it, you will know. Okay, so the NPV uses the concept of risk-free rate. That is, if you don't do anything, you take your $2,000 and deposit in bank, you're going to get some money, right? So you're going to look against that outcome and this outcome and then decide, should you deposit the money in the bank or should you buy a tool? And anything you do with your money should be better than taking no risk at all. That's the concept behind NPV. What does then IRR, internal rate of return, mean? What this means is, sometimes we don't make our decisions by looking at bank rate or bank interest rate or government bond rates, because we run our own company and our own business. As a carpenter, you want to judge yourself, your decisions, by looking at how you run your business, not how a bank runs business. So if you have $2,000 and you wanted to consider whether to purchase this drill or that drill, you know, the first one, both of them cost $2,000, but the first one has a lifetime of 5 years and it will pay $60 per month for you for those 5 years, whereas the second one has a lifetime of 6 years and it will pay $40 per month for you, or so on and so forth. And you want to compare these two decisions, but you don't want to look at bank rate or anything. And in such cases, what you will do is you will assume that your NPV at the end of this cycle is going to be zero in both scenarios. Okay. So all the current payout and all the future payments, when you add them up in today's terms, everything will become zero. So you assume that we get zero as NPV. That means both decisions are equal. And then you ask, what would be the interest rate in the first scenario? What would be the interest rate in second scenario? Okay, how efficient is these two are? That is where we calculate internal rate of return. By this, what we will do is we will ask, if I have $2,000 and I'm giving it today and I'm going to receive $60 per month for the next 5 years, and if that entire NPV were to be zero, what kind of interest rate I'm talking about here? Okay, what kind of a bank that says, I'll give you a loan of $2,000 today and you pay me in 5 years every month for $60. You know, what would be that bank's interest rate? Essentially, so you will look at that kind of a thing, and that's what we call as internal rate of return. And then you compare the IRR against different choices, and wherever the IRR is higher, that means that is the one that you should probably go for, and you will pick that choice. So these are five concepts, and again, I just want to tell you that I'm not a finance expert, so I tried my best explaining this. I hope I succeeded, but you can let me know in the feedback of this podcast, so that if there is any part of the explanation that didn't make sense, I'll figure out a way to talk about that in more detail in an upcoming episode. Or maybe I can invite a special guest and, you know, pick their brain so that we can learn better about these concepts. But I think, to the extent that I know these concepts and I use them in my work, I think I have done a reasonably good job, but you can tell me later on. So now that we know these five concepts, let's talk about a practical day-to-day example where you can apply these concepts and make a decision as an analyst. Let's say, you know, this is the age where we are talking about car sharing and car sharing companies like Uber and Lyft and all sorts of companies are getting more and more popular. So as a new analyst, let's say you just finished your studies and you got a job as a financial analyst at ABC Bank with attractive salary and lots of benefits and whatnot, and you are thinking, hey, should I buy a car or should I just fire up my Uber app and just book a cab every time I need to go somewhere? So this is the decision that you have to make. Now, buying a car could be an emotional decision. It is an emotional decision for me. It was an emotional decision for me. When I bought my first car, which is in 2010, it took me a while to figure out when that was. So I bought it because we had twins, a boy and girl, in 2009 September, and I had a bike, not my cycle. I have a bike, like a motorbike, and we used to go everywhere on that bike, Joe and I. But once the kids are born, it kind of gets difficult to travel by bike with four people. Of course, it is impossible in any Western country, but in India, you know, it's quite common to see a small family of mom, dad, and two small kids all traveling on a single bike. Okay, so if you have not experienced India, probably you can see some pictures online and you will know what I mean by that. So we used to go to doctor place or any place else where we have to take the small kids. I used to take them by the bike. But I know it is a very risky thing to do also. So as soon as possible, I wanted to buy a car because I didn't want to expose my kids to the harsh roads. And on a bike, there is really very little stability and scope of accidents is higher. Whereas in a car, at least you are in a covered space. So your family is a little safe. So as soon as possible, I wanted to buy a car. And once I have enough money, I went to the car dealership and I bought the car. So it was an emotional decision for me. I didn't put a spreadsheet in front of me and try to analyze the NPV and IRR for those. But let's say you don't have small kids or any other emotional things that make you buy a car. So you really wanted to approach this decision objectively. So your question is, should I buy a car or should I use an app like Uber and pay for all my rides? So in this case, essentially you have two options. Buying a car, let's say it costs, of course you are a smart analyst, so you're not probably going to buy a brand new car. You're going to buy a reasonably good second-hand vehicle. So let's say this new second-hand vehicle that you're going to purchase is going to cost you $10,000. Okay, so it's a one-time payment of $10,000. On top, you have recurring costs of insurance and registration fees and lumber plates and pollution checks and gas and everything. Okay, so you create a model in Excel that kind of depicts these input parameters for option one, which is buying a car. Okay, so your upfront cost is $10,000, your recurring costs per year are these, and your maintenance or running costs are per mile. You would pay so many cents for gasoline and maybe per every 1,000 kilometers you would pay so much on toll and extra. So you set up that and you also have some sort of a criteria, how many miles on average you're going to travel per month. So you would also have that kind of a setup. And then you will compare for that similar mileage. Let's say on every month you want to go to, you want to travel 1,000 miles. Okay, a lot of travel, but let's say, you know, that's what you want to drive around. So for the similar 1,000 miles driven within a Uber cab, how much is that going to cost you? You will set up that as option two. In both cases, you are going to pay out of your pocket. But there are stark differences between both approaches. In the first approach, you're going to pay a lot of upfront fee of $10,000. And you're going to pay extra fee for licensing, obtaining a license, obtaining registration, and vehicle maintenance and servicing and whatnot. In the second case, you're not going to pay anything. You're just going to pay the cab fees, which could be some sort of a fixed fee plus per kilometer or per mile charges. So once you have both of these options, we then take some sort of a meaningful time frame, like 5 years, and you wanted to see within 5 years which option is going to be an attractive one, because you know that after 5 years you would definitely buy a car, probably because you're going to get married and you're going to have a family, and then buying a car becomes an emotional decision. Right now, as a fresh analyst, you don't have that, so you can afford to do an objective analysis of that. So with these two options, you would then build some sort of a cash flow model, which is a technical term, but essentially cash flow model represents for each and every date within that time frame, how much money you're going to pay out or how much money you're going to receive. In both cases, there is really no benefit that you will receive, because you're always going to pay money out of your pocket to maintain the car or run the car. Probably in the first case, which is where you buy a car, at the end of 5 years, you might be able to sell off that car and make $2,000 or $3,000 because, you know, the car also loses its value over a period of time. So we set up such a cash flow model with each and every day or at a monthly level, how much money we are going to spend, how much is our expenditure with both options. And then we calculate both options NPV, net present value, because essentially we're going to pay out some money in future, and we wanted to know how all of that totals up as of today, NPV. So we calculate the net present value of both of these, and whichever has higher NPV, we're going to pick that option. That's what an objective analyst would do. Now, how does this look on paper? What kind of Excel formulas you will use and how to calculate them? Well, those are very, very simple. For example, to calculate NPV, you can use the formula NPV, net present value, abbreviated as NPV. We simply write that formula in Excel and you can calculate net present value of a series of payments. IRR has a similar formula, IRR, internal rate of return, and that will give you the internal rate of return of a series of payments. Okay. For more about these formulas and discussion, I would encourage you to visit chandu.org/session42, where I'm going to link to some articles and resources about this topic. Also, as a special bonus for the podcast listeners, I'm going to create a Uber versus car ownership Excel workbook, just with some assumptions, and I'm going to just throw it out there on the show notes page. Please visit chandu.org/session42. To grab the downloadable workbook of car ownership versus car rental or car sharing apps kind of analysis. And you can see that to understand how such financial analysis can be conducted by using simple concepts like time value of money and NPV. So just to wrap up, the key concept in this entire podcast has to be: with time, your money's value changes. You know, it could grow or shrink depending on which direction of time you are going and what kind of economy we are living in. But in general, pretty much any country of the world, except maybe few countries, if you have $100 today, it's going to be a little more than $100 tomorrow. Okay, so that's the basic concept of time value of money. And if you understand that, and if you know that over time your value of money changes, you could then make informed decisions, because when we talk about any decision, it usually also involves a component of time. Should we buy a new machinery or not? Because the machine has a lifetime of 5 years. You wanted to do this analysis for the 5 year period, not just for today. And when you talk about 5 year period, you need to know what kind of benefits we will accrue over the 5 years, and then discount them to today using the net present value concept, and then know whether buying this machine is going to be a positive or negative thing for the business. Okay. So that's that. Again, throughout all this discussion, we are assuming that there are no other parameters involved in the decision other than the money parameter. In real life, that's never the case. Like, you want to buy a car because you want your family to be safe. You know, there is no arguing for that fact. You can't say my family's safety gets 3% weightage in this model. You know, that's ridiculous. So whenever there are other decision parameters involved, it could be emotional, strategic, or humanitarian grounds or whatever, there is really no point doing too much financial analysis. But if you are looking at completely objective, number-driven world, then understanding financial analysis and implementing concepts like time value of money and NPV and IRR can be very, very helpful. So with that, I conclude the podcast. I hope these concepts are helpful to you. I would highly encourage you to visit chandu.org/session42, where I'm going to link to some resources and a sample workbook for this podcast so that you can learn more about these ideas. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you again in the next podcast.